Thank you. It's great to see such a large crowd here this morning. And I will say that I do have to disclose that because I'm a member of the Board of the National Network of Abortion Funds, but I'm also the case manager and I get a stipend for doing that. So I want to make sure that that's up front. This is a quote from Henry Hyde. "I would certainly like to prevent, if I could legally, anyone having an abortion, a rich woman, a middle-class woman, or a poor woman. Unfortunately, the only vehicle available is the Medicaid bill." And this is something that he said during the debates in 1976. Abortion is a constitutional right in the U.S., but many laws restrict access. And as we were just hearing, there's lots of things that do affect access, but the Hyde Amendment specifically restricts the ability for poor women to have a vehicle for payment for their abortion. There's a large number of poor women. In 2008, we saw that there were about 69% of women who were poor that were looking to have abortions that were not able to find the funding to be able to do that. And we estimate that since the Hyde Amendment came into effect, that 1 million women have been affected by this. Just give you a kind of an aspect of outside the US, if we look at public funding, the provision of public funding through public health insurance or facilities, if we look at 21 out of the 27 European Union member states and five European countries provide public funding. So when we talk about the U.S. and we compare it internationally, we do see that we have kind of a record that really isn't comparable to other countries. And again, if we even look in Mexico, South Africa, sometimes other countries that we might be consider to be third world, we still see that public funding is an important connection with the right to have an abortion. Public funding of abortion, when women aren't able to get that, there's been research that demonstrates that there are delays. And somebody made a comment about the medical abortions, and that's one of the issues. If you don't have funding for that, then you may not be able to get a medical abortion while you're working to try to come up with your funding. And so you're going to have to end up maybe getting a surgical abortion if that's not what you wanted to do, just because of the funding issue. Recently, the National Network of Abortion Funds, or the network, did a small study with the Center for Reproductive Rights. And one of the things that we were doing was interviewing women who the network or our member funds had provided funding for. And through that funding, what we found from the women were stories about forcing them to delay when they were having their procedures. Sometimes people wonder, why do women wait so long? Sometimes it's because they don't have the money. So waiting long periods of time while they're trying to raise the money. We found that the hardship that was imposed on women, for instance, women deciding that maybe they won't pay their electric bill or they'll cut back on their groceries or sell their food stamps or something like that, and then pressuring women to actually continue with an unwanted pregnancy. And although our study was very small, it's very consistent with the literature out there and the research that's been done, for instance, by the Guttmacher Institute, looking at these same issues over and over come up. And then we also know that, and some of the women said similar things, that it punishes women who are victims of domestic violence or survivors, because again, if they don't want to carry that pregnancy and now are faced with financial problems, they may be forced to do that if they can't come up with the money. Compounds other barriers such as parental consent, when you're talking about minors who already are maybe having to get a judicial bypass and they're trying to put their money together, this becomes even more problematic. And of course, the biggest issue that we're continuing to see at the network is just the compounding of the economic crisis. More and more women losing their jobs, being laid off, having low-paying jobs, and then not being able to carry forward the pregnancy because they feel like they have to do the best they can for the children that they have, but they can't afford it to have the abortion either. So one of the questions is how much should a woman and her family have to give up in order to be able to have an abortion? Should she and her children go hungry? Should she pawn everything that she has, her television? Should she try to sell her car? Should she risk being evicted, not being able to pay her rent, lose her chance at a job, or risk her health? And I'm just going to tell you quickly of a story of a mother that I talked to recently who already had four children, 28 years old, had just lost her job because of layoffs, was waiting for her unemployment to kick in, but it hadn't happened yet, had just applied for food stamps but wasn't getting them, and had $200 in her pocket. And she was 8 weeks pregnant, and in Dallas, her abortion would cost her $375. So luckily, she found the Texas Equal Access Fund, and actually the National Network of Abortion Funds kicked in a little bit of money too. But otherwise, this woman would not have been able to have her abortion and would have been forced to carry through a pregnancy that she felt she couldn't have at that point. Or a 21-year-old student that I talked to recently who lived on campus, had a part-time job, and was trying to save her money to have her abortion, but was already at 14 weeks pregnant. And so her abortion had already risen to $450. And again, she had about $150 of that. What we're looking at the National Network is the idea of transformational politics, trying to help women today and look at how we can do more to defend abortion, Medicaid coverage in the states where it exists. And one of the things that we've done over the last couple of years is to formulate the Hyde Coalition. And in doing this, what we've been saying is, okay, turning it over is not a winner. It's not going to happen even when we had a Democratic majority, it's certainly not going to happen now. But what's the long-term strategy that we can do towards moving towards that? And in May, we started that process by having some convenings in Washington where we brought together many players to look at how we could make this happen. This is a quote from Eric Schneiderman, and it's talking about transformational politics, that it's the work we do today to ensure that the deal we get, and he was talking about on gun control or immigration reform in a year or 5 years or 20 years, will be better than the deal that we get today. So it's not making deals today that we can't live with down the road that are going to be problematic. And one of the areas that we feel recently that this happened was with around healthcare reform. By being okay and saying that the Hyde Amendment was okay, let's don't get any worse than that, being worried that we were going to not have healthcare if we caved in and said, no, we demand the ability to have abortions, we really maintained what people thought was the status quo. And it's not. It's even more harmful now. Now we're looking at doing things around the exchanges and other things where it's going to be even more problematic for women. So what we're saying is that Hyde has been the building block, and people have continued to kind of use that as a stepping stone. Okay? The silver lining, we hope, is that people are getting mad enough now to kind of take on new energy. And even at the convenings, many of the groups that we had previously talked with that weren't willing to make any movement have said, well, maybe we do need to look at this. So that's been kind of the silver lining. One of the issues is always, how do we get together and have a cohesive message? And so we're trying to do this, we're trying to build a movement, and that's one of the reasons we've come here as well, is to say we need more people. We need people in the public health arena to join us and say, this is a human rights issue. It's not just about the right to have an abortion. So we've joined with women of color organizations and allies, and we're trying to create a long-term strategy with a lot of things that we can do to move forward to be able to make a real difference for women's lives and try to keep it grounded in women's real lives, that it's not just about having an abortion, it's also about the right to bear children if you want to, it's about the right to be able to live in a safe environment. It's about the right to be able to feed and clothe your kids. And so we're looking at all of those things. You saw this slide previously talking about some of the states, but we're also very concerned about what message we're sending out. We know the pro-choice message doesn't resonate with everybody. We're trying to look at what new messages can exist. And we're also looking at state threats. And one of the most recent things has been in the state of Minnesota, with the change in what's happened with the governor's race there and with some of the change with legislators, there's a real concern now that Medicaid funding will be lost in Minnesota. And if that happens, there'll be even more women that will be added to the rolls of not being able to get their abortion. So that's definitely a concern. The other another issue is just looking at the Smith bill that was recently, that was put forward last year. We think it'll come up again. And this is a way that they're looking to codify HIDE, so it doesn't have to come up every year for a vote, but will just be in place. And so we need people to be educated about that and to really understand that we need to be really looking at this, especially with the electoral changes that have happened. The other thing is that recently we worked with other groups to come together, and we put out this video. You can see it through our website if you want. It's down there on the bottom. And again, it's talking about that one of the first thing that's happening is that bringing women into the high-risk pool, the women with the most healthcare problems and issues, they're looking to ban abortion. So they're saying to women with healthcare problems where having a heart condition and carrying the pregnancy might be problematic, you're not going to be able to still have your abortion. So we're definitely looking for people to partner with us. One of the great things that we've been able to do this year is hire Jamila Taylor, who's a person on the ground for us in DC. We help fund women every day to have their abortions. That's our direct connection. But we also realize now we need to be fighting this at the policy standpoint, and we're looking for people to join us in that. So here's our website and also my email if you're interested. So I think we have time for questions. Sorry, I went quickly because I didn't want to be the one that went over. So. Okay, so talking about the separation of church and state in the Hyde Amendment, I mean, I think one of the reasons the Hyde Amendment was successful was some of the backlash around welfare and some of the real, and continues to be, the real belief, you know, that our country has about people pulling themselves up, taking care of their own issues, and so not using state or federal dollars to be able to pay for that. That's what has been a successful argument for people.
So you're saying that this group of people may be market justice philosophy?
Well, and also obviously one of the, she's saying the market justice philosophy, and then obviously the really strong value component that comes into this no matter what. And to that, people do bring, you know, whatever they come to the table with, their religious values or all of that. I mean, there are often people who think they know best for the rest of us, right? So this is one of the best examples of that.
Paternalistic.
Exactly, paternalistic. Yes?
You mentioned in your earlier slide that public funding is a
So talking about it in South Africa, worried that it's more trying to make people have abortions. Go ahead.
I'm a reproductive health advocate with an office in South Africa and do a lot of work on abortion ethics there. And that's not true. I mean, it was a very revolutionary law at the time of the fall of apartheid that really covered abortion and made abortion really quite available. There are certainly many problems with it. For example, there isn't medication abortion isn't available in the public sector. But it's otherwise I would say it's really based on equity and justice. And there is also a very strong contraception program in South Africa.
Great, thank you. I will say one little thing about that is that there's been an effort in Georgia and Illinois, some of you may have heard about this, with billboards, where they're saying to African-American women that this is genocide, and that that you should be fighting this issue. And there have been a lot of groups that have come out. Sister Song Collective is a women of color organization that has come out strongly to say this is about individual choice for women, and you know, black women and have a right to do this as well. So I'm trying to counter these horrible messages that people are giving out. That's great. Great, great. Thank you very much. Yes.
I'm Sally Craig Huber, and I started my career in public health before Roe versus Wade was decided. As a matter of fact, I worked on some of the first federally funded studies of abortion, morbidity, and mortality pre-Roe versus Wade. Jane Doe of the Doe versus Bolton case, which was decided at the same time, was a client of mine. I'm increasingly concerned that we're going to go back to the bad old days, when women were dying in hospitals all over our country. And I just want to urge us, as we're doing this kind of studies and this kind of research, to take into account pre-Roe versus Wade and what we know about what was happening at that time, and bring some of those facts forward, because we're headed there, and I'm concerned. We got mad and got angry and got active in those days. I don't see us doing that. Doing studies, presenting the research, but let's get active. I mean, I'm sorry to get so emotional, but I feel like I'm living my life over here.
Thank you very much. It's great. Thank you. Thank you very much.